is the RTE News at 1 with Brian Dobson. Good afternoon. The headlines this Monday lunchtime. The parents of a teenage girl have told her inquest they begged for help as their daughter died at University Hospital Limerick. The Taoiseach Simon Harris has said he's seeking clarity on the laws governing protests outside the homes of politicians. And a campaign has been announced to address dog attacks on people and livestock. The news in detail with Brian Jennings.
An inquest into
the death of a 16-year-old girl at University Hospital Limerick has heard claims from her parents that medical staff provided no help whatsoever as her condition deteriorated. Aoife Johnston died in December 2022 after what the HSC has conceded were significant failings in the care provided to her. Our Western correspondent, Pat McGrath.
Aoife Johnson from Shannon in County Clare presented at the emergency department in UHL on the evening of Saturday the 17th of December 2022. She died the following Monday after developing sepsis. The inquest into her death at Kilmallock Courthouse heard depositions from her parents, James and Carol, this morning. They detailed how they made repeated attempts over several hours to get medical assistance for their daughter. James Johnson said Aoife was screaming in agony, getting sicker and sicker and sicker as the night went on. He said hospital staff provided no help whatsoever. Carol Johnson said her daughter was violently ill as others in the ED implored medics to assist her. She told the court, "We watched our daughter die. I wouldn't wish that on anyone." Some 25 witnesses are scheduled to give evidence to the inquest over the coming days. Proceedings have been continuing with testimony from medics who were on duty that night. Pat McGrath, RTE News, Kilmallock, County Limerick.
The Taoiseach Simon Harris has said he is concerned and frustrated at the growing number of protests outside the homes of politicians. Last week, a group of people wearing masks protested outside the home of the Minister for Integration, Roderick O'Gorman. Our political correspondent, Micheál Lehan.
Simon Harris said he had first-hand experience of these types of protests, with one taking place outside his own home in 2017. He told the Today with Claire Byrne programme that a number of other TDs, including the Sinn Féin leader Mary Lou MacDonald, have also been targeted. Mr Harris said he is now seeking clarity on a simple question, and that is if the existing laws are robust enough. And if they are, he wants to know if Gardaí are sufficiently empowered to enforce them. The Taoiseach also committed to passing new laws on hate crime, but he said this was separate to addressing concerns about those protests outside politicians' homes. The Justice Minister is expected to bring proposals on this legislation to government party leaders within weeks. The Taoiseach said he wants to be sure that any concerns about freedom of speech are addressed.
A US pensioner who came to Ireland 30 years ago and applied for passports in the names of two dead babies has been sentenced to 27 months in prison by Cork Circuit Court. Randolph Kirkparker, who's 73, pleaded guilty to five charges in a case where he had applied for Irish passports in the names of two babies, Geoffrey Warbrook and Philip Morris, who died in the 1950s. A national campaign to promote responsible dog ownership has been announced. It follows a number of serious attacks on adults and children that resulted in grave injuries and also attacks on livestock. The campaign will run until the end of May across radio, print and online media. Our agriculture correspondent, Joe McGrady.
It's not your dog's fault, it's yours, is the central message of this new campaign aimed at dog owners. It's intended to increase awareness among owners of the harm out-of-control dogs can do to people and to livestock. Minister for Rural and Community Development Heather Humphreys said there have been far too many devastating attacks by dogs on people, especially young children, in recent times. And no matter how harmless a dog might seem, they are capable of causing a lot of damage. She said owners must ensure dogs are under control at all times and not running wild, endangering people, livestock and other dogs. The campaign comes as the work of the recently established dog control stakeholder group continues. It will make recommendations to government on strengthening policy and legislation around dog control and restricting certain breeds of dogs.
And now the weather.
RTE Radio 1 weather with Grant. Take home heating efficiency to new levels with Grant's air-to-water heat pump and underfloor heating. Visit grant.ie.
It'll be generally dry today. The best of the sunshine will be in Munster and South Connacht. Cloud in Ulster and Leinster will spread further south and west this afternoon. Highest temperatures will range from 12 to 18 degrees. Brian.
Thank you, Brian. Still to come this lunchtime, not getting the attention it requires. Micheál Martin unhappy over a call for EU trade relations with Israel to be reviewed. We'll hear from Luxembourg. The inquest into the death at Limerick Hospital of teenager Aoife Johnson. Her family say they still haven't seen the independent report. Europe is now the fastest warming continent on the planet, according to the EU's Copernicus Climate Service. We'll hear from its deputy director. And that new campaign to warn dog owners of the dangers their pets can pose to humans and livestock will have the reaction of hill farmers.
Your TV license supports essential public media in Ireland. If you've recently paid your TV license, thank you. For more, see tvlicense.ie or visit any post office. Remember, if you have a TV, you must have a TV license. Brought to you by the Government of Ireland.
These are eggs. Quick whisk, no risk, protein punch, power lunch, bake for dinner, easy winner, fed the lot, hit the spot eggs. And why pick up more eggs when you're shopping? Because there are more ways to enjoy them. Like bacon and mushroom fried rice with poached eggs, delicious sautéed potatoes with spinach and eggs, or everyone's favourite, a simple cheese omelette for lunch. So versatile, so nourishing. And always choose eggs with a Board Bia quality mark for the highest standards verified at every stage. Eggs. Crack on.
Hello again. You're listening to the news at one. A joint Irish-Spanish call for the EU to review its trade arrangements with Israel over the war in Gaza is not getting the attention it requires, according to Tánaiste Micheál Martin. The Irish and Spanish governments wrote to the European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen in February, asking her to assess if Israel was in breach of the human rights clauses in the EU-Israel Association Agreement. Ahead of a European Council meeting in Luxembourg today, Mr. Martin said he was still waiting for a response.
Essentially, we're calling for a review by the Commission of the association agreement, and particularly the degree to which Israel is fulfilling the human rights clauses of that agreement. Because what has transpired in Gaza is absolutely unacceptable from a humanitarian point of view. We're of the view in Ireland that humanitarian law has been breached and broken time and time again now, and that the level of civilians dying, and women and children, is quite shocking, and it's beyond comprehension that the bombardment of Gaza continues, given the depths of despair and destruction that is going on there.
The EU's foreign policy chief Joseph Borrell told our Europe editor Tony Connolly that the request remains somewhat in limbo.
Well, as far as I know, the Commission has still not answered it to the two states who ask. They didn't ask for the review of the Association Council. They asked to analyze if there is a big if, the behavior of Israel is something that could consider being the Association Council affected. There is an if and a would.
Let's talk to our Europe editor, Tony Connolly, who joins us now from Luxembourg. Tony, is there any indication that this request for review has made any progress whatsoever?
Not a huge amount, and I think that was the subtle message there from Josep Borrell. Now, he is the EU's foreign policy chief, so he represents EU foreign ministers. He articulates the EU's foreign policy position, and he chairs meetings of the Foreign Affairs Council like today. But he's also he's a member of the European Commission. Now, he's saying, look, on my part, I've raised this at EU foreign ministers meeting. He's asked the Israeli foreign minister if he wanted to come and discuss the review question, through the EU-Israel Association Council, which oversees this agreement. That request was declined. It's not getting any real traction among EU foreign ministers. And if you ask the European Commission, as Simon Harris, the Taoiseach, did when he met Ursula von der Leyen there a few weeks ago, they're kind of saying, well, look, this is being discussed by foreign ministers. So it seems to be somewhat suspended between foreign ministers and the Commission, and as such there isn't a time frame for this review to take place. Although, having said that, Mr. Borrell said that, you know, the EU has a human rights envoy who's looking at this, and he said the United Nations human rights people are looking at it as well. While there is some work underway, there isn't the kind of review, I think, that the Irish government and the Spanish government felt there should be. Again, Micheál Martin and his Spanish counterpart will raise it at today's meeting.
Mr. Martin did say they anticipated that there'd be significant pushback or resistance. Are any other EU countries supporting this call?
None have come out explicitly in favour of reviewing this association agreement, because, as you know, support for Israel is strong among a key number of EU member states, and that fault line remains in place, and I think it applies also to this question. So it has been somewhat kicked into touch and is in limbo. And like the other issue of recognising Palestinian statehood, there isn't a groundswell of support in favour of this action. And it's just one of many strands that are, I suppose, open at the moment in terms of trying to bring Israel to account.
On the agenda for that meeting in Luxembourg today is Ukraine. What's the prospect of further EU assistance for the Ukrainians in advance of what is widely expected now to be a Russian offensive in the spring and early summer?
Well, they're looking at the question of air defence systems. Now, obviously, the EU as an organisation doesn't have air defence systems, but they're trying to encourage countries that do have air defence systems, like Patriot missiles, to give them to Ukraine if they can. And Josep Borrell making the point, you need launchers as well as the actual missiles themselves. So Ukraine is in need of all that kind of stuff. But obviously, people have been boosted by the decision by that we had to agree finally to a $60 billion support package, which would go towards helping Ukraine, certainly at the front line.
Very good. Tony Connolly in Luxembourg, thank you for that. The inquest into the death of Aoife Johnson has opened at Kilmallock Courthouse in County Limerick. The 16-year-old died at University Hospital Limerick in December 2022. The teenager, who was from Shannon in County Clare, had waited 12 hours to be seen at the hospital emergency department. Our Western correspondent Pat McGrath was at today's hearing and joins us now from Limerick. Pat, at the outset, lawyers for Aoife's family said that they'd raised the fact that they're waiting to get access to this independent report which was commissioned into Aoife's death.
That's right. It's one of a number of inquiries into the circumstances surrounding the death of the 16-year-old. This is an independent report that was completed last year. There's also a formal HSE investigation underway led by former Chief Justice Frank Clark. But legal representatives for the Johnson family, Damien Tansey, senior counsel, said they were requesting that the coroner direct that this interim report be made available to the family. Now, for UHL, Conor Halpin SC said it wasn't a matter of evidence for the purposes of the inquest, and that the HSE had no problem with it being used, as he put it, as an aid memoir, but it wasn't appropriate for the coroner to make a ruling in relation to the report. And Mr. Tansey also raised concerns about the availability of some witnesses over the coming days. This is going to run for the next 4 days here in Kilmallock, but one of the witnesses who we will hear a deposition from, we've heard a deposition from, a nurse McCarthy, who was on duty that evening. She's abroad at present and isn't available to be cross-examined. Mr. Tansey saying this was far from ideal, but after those housekeeping matters were dealt with, the evidence proper then commenced.
Yes, and that included Aoife's parents giving a really very harrowing account of what happened.
That's right. Her parents, James and Carol, accompanied by her sisters, Kate and Megan, entered the courthouse carrying two portraits of Aoife Johnson. And at the outset, coroner John McNamara asked if they'd like to have them displayed. So they've been brought to a desk at the top of the courtroom and they're displayed at the inquest over the next few days. In his deposition, James Johnson outlined the chain of events that led to him bringing his daughter to University Hospital Limerick, to the emergency department there on the 17th of December 2022. She woke up as normal that morning. She developed a headache and felt unwell. She was brought to Shannon Dock that afternoon at around a quarter to five, and they advised that she be taken to the emergency department. And he said that when he got there, her condition continued to deteriorate, and he outlined how over several hours he made repeated efforts to get further attention for her. He said Aoife's skin was blotchy, she was vomiting, there was no trolley available, she was screaming in agony and ultimately was physically unable to stand. But he said that effectively, as she got sicker and sicker and sicker, hospital staff provided, as he put it, no help whatsoever. We also heard then from Carol Johnson, Aoife's mother, and she said that her daughter was screaming in agony. She'd been put into a kind of a storage room, and she was in such pain that people who were also awaiting treatment were imploring medics to assist her. The emergency department was extremely busy at the time, and it wasn't until 6 o'clock on the morning of the 18th of December that she was finally seen by a doctor. Mrs. Johnson told the court that they had watched their daughter die, and she rejected suggestions that she'd shown some signs of improvement. She said, "We told her she was in the best place for her, but she wasn't."
There was a letter of apology read out to Aoife's parents at the inquest, Pat.
That's right. Court heard that there are two letters of apology, one from the chief executive of the HSE, Bernard Gloucester, in which he acknowledged the failings in the care provided and making a formal apology on behalf of the HSE. Mr. Gloucester saying the executive failed Aoife when she attended the emergency department, and there were problems of significant proportions with, as the letter said, clear and catastrophic consequences. He offered profound regret and sincere apology. In a second letter to the family from the CEO of the University Hospital in Limerick, Colette Cowan, she also apologised for for failings in the care, acknowledging the devastating consequences and regretting missed opportunities. As I said, the inquest has broken for lunch. It's going to continue this afternoon. We're going to hear from about 25 witnesses over the coming days, and proceedings expected to continue until Thursday.
Pat McGrath, Western Correspondent, thanks for that. Taoiseach Simon Harris has said he's concerned and frustrated at the growing number of protests outside the homes of politicians. It follows a protest by a group of people wearing masks outside the home of the Minister for Integration, Roderick O'Gorman, late last week. Mr. Harris was speaking on RTÉ's Today with Claire Byrne programme.
I'm really concerned. And what I want clarity on this week is a very simple question. Is this a matter of enforcement or a matter of law? In other words, are the laws that we have robust enough and therefore they just need to be enforced, or do we need new law? And I really want that question answered.
The Taoiseach speaking a little earlier. Well, Mr. Harris's comments come as the Garda Representative Association begins its annual conference in Mayo. Let's talk to James Morisseau, who's Interim Deputy General Secretary of the GRA. A very good afternoon to you. Welcome to the programme.
Good afternoon.
Maybe you can help us and Mr. Harris with an answer to that question. Is this an issue that needs new and tougher laws, or is it an operational question, these protests?
Well, I listened closely to Taoiseach's comments earlier regarding this incident, and I did note his concerns, which we actually share. And he raised the issue, is there a robust enough reaction to it, or do we need new laws? Well, if he's concerned, so are we. You know, in particular regarding whether new legislation is required to deal with them or not. Our frontline members who are tasked with dealing with these instances need clear and unambiguous direction when dealing with them. And if this requires new legislation, the GRA would absolutely welcome that, because we currently receive very little training as how to deal with such incidents. So if if the Taoiseach is concerned about it, so are we. So we would welcome, if he feels the need for new legislation, we would welcome that.
So what is the guidance? What are the instructions given to Gardaí deployed in this kind of situation, whether it's a protest outside somebody's home?
Well, it seems to be at the moment that there's a standoffish approach, and just to stand by and let it happen. And then we've seen the guidance that was issued at the weekend, and a lot of legislation was referenced by the commissioner as to what to do and how to deal with it. But it's a very wide ranging and broad, and the legislation that was quoted in the guidance was never intended to deal with such incidents. These incidents are coming to the fore recently, and it is very noteworthy that Taoiseach said earlier on that new legislation may be needed. So he recognises that, and I note that he met the commissioner actually last Friday week along with the Minister for Justice, so I'm sure they discussed that at length. But we need direction, we need to be managed, we need leadership in relation to this, so we need to be led on it.
So at the moment, Gardaí who are in these situations are told to keep, is that right, a watching brief on what's happening?
Well, every situation will be different. I mean, if you look back, we had the Dublin riots. We had, Taoiseach referenced today earlier on as well about how his home was targeted back in 2017. So each case will be different, and each protest will be different. But you have to react on the ground. If there are breaches of the law, we will be obliged to act. But we can't be acting with one hand tied behind our backs. We need the legislation to back us. And that's why I referenced earlier that the legislation referenced by the Commissioner may not have been good enough legislation to deal with the particular incidents, because these are new, and these are coming something new every day.
So how would the law need to change then to give Gardaí more power to police these kind of situations?
Well, if it's something new about putting up posters on a gate or being in the environs of a house and just being on the edge of legislation or on the edge of law, we need something more permanent and something more forceful, that it could be an offence to gather outside someone's private residence. And there are common law powers that we've relied on over the years since the foundation of the state, and they're called common law powers for an arrest for the breach of the peace, where a breach of the peace may be taken place. So we have those powers, but this is something different. This is something new that's coming to the fore, and it is noteworthy, and I'll repeat it again, that the Taoiseach has concerns that we need new legislation, and we would welcome that.
I mean, at the moment then, quite clearly, it's not in itself illegal to gather out outside somebody's private residence, to put up posters on their railings, on their wall, and to appear masked, unidentified.
Yeah, well, it would appear to be the case, but I mean, that's something that has to change. If we need legislation to deal with that, it has to be introduced. So we can't be policing with one hand tied behind our backs. We are policing authority in the state, so we have to be able to act if people are being put in fear in their own homes.
Is this not the kind of issue, and you have many other issues on your agenda over the next number of days, are these not the kind of issues you should be engaging directly with Commissioner Drew Harris there at your conference, rather than declining to invite him?
Well, look, a decision was made not to invite Commissioner Harris, and it's noteworthy that the Minister for Justice isn't going to come to our conference either. But we engage with Commissioner Harris regularly, but there was a vote of no confidence, and we have to recognise the legitimacy of what our frontline members are saying. So on one hand, we have to recognise what they're saying, so he's not invited. So we will be making it known to him our concerns, and our concerns will be well documented in the media, so he will be aware of them.
But this is your annual gathering. This is when representatives come from right across the country to air the concerns of rank and file Gardaí, and the one person who can address those concerns is the Commissioner and his leadership team, and he's not going to be there this week.
Yeah, he's not going to be there, and it's been well publicised, but as I said, he will be aware, and he is aware of our issues, and he will be aware of them going forward. So just at the moment, he is not here, and the Minister for Justice has declined to come, but we will have a robust conference. We will speak about our issues, we will debate our issues, and they will develop our policy going forward.
Can I just ask you finally about the report in the Irish Times today, Conor Lally reporting that a shotgun which was seized by Gardaí in an operation operation some years ago and was supposed to be kept secure as evidence, turned up again, seized again in another Garda operation. How concerning is that?
Well, look, it's an ongoing criminal investigation and can't really comment on individual investigation, but I note that Garda HQ has released a statement regarding the Commissioner's recent public comments on the critical importance of proper control and recording of evidential material in Garda Síochána's possession. So, look, I just want to state that categorically there is no correlation between criminality and the recent case where a Garda lent a bicycle to an elderly man, and any attempt to link the two is extremely cynical in my view. And the timing of this statement is also somewhat questionable coming on the first day of our conference. So, you know, we the many GRA members have no time for criminality on Garda Síochána, and they've been involved in prosecuting members of Garda Síochána since my time in the force, and it will continue long after I'm gone. So, look, it has no correlation to recent comments in relation to the bicycle case.
Okay, we'll leave it there. James Morisseau, Deputy General Secretary of the GRA, thanks for talking to us. The number of people dying from heat-related illness has risen by around 30% in Europe in the past 20 years, according to an EU report out today. The report from the European Union's Copernicus Climate Change Service says Europe is warming twice as fast as the global average and that heat waves will become longer and more powerful in the future. Let's talk to Dr. Samantha Burgess, who's Deputy Director of the Copernicus Service. A very good afternoon to you, Dr. Burgess, and thank you once again for talking to us here on the programme. We find with each of your successive reports that yet more records are broken, and today's report is no different.
Yes, that's right, and thank you for the invitation. So Europe is warming faster than the global average at about twice the global rate, and the three warmest years on record for Europe have all occurred since 2020. And with these record temperatures, we also have a record number of extreme events, and these extreme events include heat waves, wildfires, flooding and storm events, as well as record sea surface temperatures and record melting of glaciers.
This finding that heat-related illnesses, deaths from heat-related illnesses have risen by around a third over the last two decades. What's been the pattern there? Is that something that's accelerated in more recent years?
Yes, that's right. So before 2000, Europe wasn't warming particularly quickly. So there's a number of reasons that we believe or scientists believe are the reason why Europe is now warming at much faster than the global average. One is the proximity to the Arctic. So the Arctic is the warmest region of our planet that's warming most rapidly. We've also had changes in air quality that have improved the air pollution and improved reduced aerosols in the atmosphere, which have led to more solar radiation energy from the sun effectively hitting the Earth's surface. And then there's atmospheric dynamics at play here as well.
So is one of the lessons in this, given presumably that some of this change is not easily reversed, that we're going to have to adapt to these higher temperatures and confront in some way the risk of heat-related illness?
Yes, very much so. And that's one of the things that we hope we'll get across with this report and other reports that we publish frequently, that climate change isn't a future problem. I think much of the rhetoric talks about climate change in 2050, in 2100. The reality is climate change is here. It's impacting all of us here and now, and we need to adapt to our new climate normal where we have much warmer temperatures than we used to, and we need to manage that to protect the most vulnerable parts of our society against impacts like heat waves.
Another thing you track are the rise in sea temperatures, recording increases in the surface sea temperature, I think in one case off the west coast of Ireland, with temperatures as much as 5.5 degrees above average.
Yes, that's right. So we saw an exceptional marine heat wave. It was classified as extreme. And extreme marine heat waves are when there's a heat wave that is above 5 degrees above the climatological normal or above the normal temperatures for that part of the ocean. And we know that extreme marine heat wave that impacted the eastern North Atlantic off the coast of Ireland, the United Kingdom last year, year led to devastating impacts in the environment. When we see these marine heat waves, it, just like we get heat waves on land, it impacts the biodiversity, it impacts the physics of the system, and it also impacts the chemistry of the ocean.
And just one final, perhaps more encouraging aspect of this report, pretty encouraging numbers in relation to power generation from renewables.
Yes, that's right. So for the second year in a row, we have seen more energy being produced across Europe from renewable energy sources. And the renewable energy sources that we include in our report are solar, onshore wind, and run-of-river hydropower. So that's really good news that we are making the sustainable transition. And in the past 2 years, we've seen more energy generation in Europe from renewables rather than polluting fossil fuels.
Dr. Samantha Burgess from the Copernicus Service, thanks very much for talking to us. Here, the housing charity DePaul has called for an increase in specialised accommodation for victims of trafficking in Ireland. The organisation has been running the first specialist service for women victims of trafficking for a number of months. It's warned that without more temporary accommodation of this kind, more victims will fall into homelessness. Ruhama, which works with victims of sex trafficking, has said more step-down facilities from services are required for those from those provided by DePaul. Well, Alva Canidias, our social affairs correspondent, she's with us now. First of all, Alva, tell us about this accommodation that's been set up for victims of trafficking.
Yes, so Ireland had no dedicated accommodation for victims of trafficking until recently. And this was something we faced criticism from, internationally and nationally. So we received criticism from the Trafficking in Persons report that would be US-based, and then here at home by our own National Rapporteur on Trafficking, which is the Irish Human Rights and Equality Commission. An 8-bed unit has been established under the Department of Integration. Now, this type of accommodation was recommended as part of the government's zero tolerance strategy on sexual and gender-based violence, but it's being set up under IPASS, which is why Roderick O'Gorman's department is key to this and behind setting it up. Now, that in itself, his department's involvement in itself points to the fact that many of the people who are trafficked into the country, they're brought in here for prostitution or the sex trade, but there are other forms of trafficking, like for labour, for example. But this unit, it's the first of its kind, it's for women only, and it's been opened very quietly in recent months in an undisclosed location to ensure the protection of the women. Now, DePaul, which is running the unit, it's running it with trauma-informed and trained staff, but it's realised that really all homeless organisations need to be given training on how to work with these kind of victims, because it's so easy for them to slip into homeless services and they're very vulnerable. And DePaul's CEO, David Carl, he says there needs to be much more joined up thinking in this regard.
We'd like to see the homeless providers and the system to be fully integrated into the National Action Plan to combat trafficking. And as part of that, for everybody who's working in this area to be trained comprehensively. But more importantly, and as important, we want to see an improvement and increase in the amount of gender-specific accommodation that exists for people who have been trafficked because of the huge and horrible traumatic experiences that people have experienced due to this awful crime.
I think, Alpha, though, there's also a view that providing accommodation of this sort is not enough on its own.
Yeah, so Ruhama is the organisation that works with victims of sex trafficking, and it says, like, it's fine to set up a unit like this, but what happens when the women leave these facilities, like the one that's been run by DePaul? Its CEO, Barbara Condon, says there needs to be step-down facilities, otherwise the women are just left in a very vulnerable situation.
There's no point in having somebody in a unit doing really well for a couple of months and then they're back to square one. Where do we send them? Do they go back to worse accommodation than they came from? So it's crucial that the planning and the upscaling of further accommodation units is paramount.
So do you think that this has been thought through properly, or have you been consulted, for example?
It's not that it hasn't been thought through. You know, there was very definite proposals on the table. But given that we're in a housing crisis, there has been one kind of, I suppose, block after another in terms of being able to get this off the line. We did have concerns about the fact that it was coming through the IPAS provision, but it was that or nothing. So we felt it was better to get something off the ground as a pilot, test it out. We could learn and tweak from it. But it's clearly, having done the pilot now, you know, we need something outside of the IPAS provision in terms of sustainable accommodation and specialised accommodation for victims of human trafficking.
And Alva, is there any idea what that accommodation might look like?
Well, Ruhama says the 8-bed unit for single women, that's welcome, but it isn't enough. You know, a lot of the women they deal with have children, so that has to be factored into these facilities. While DePaul says there needs to be gender-specific accommodation also for male victims of trafficking.
Alva Keneally, Social Affairs Correspondent, thanks for that. Back with more after this short break.
Hey, who's coming to the PTSB Ideal Home Show?
At last, we're going to do something with the house.
It's time to see about an SEAI retrofit grant and...
But our furniture and decor need a serious makeover.
There's thousands of ideas on interior design, furniture, kitchens, bathrooms and extending.
It's all at the PTSB Ideal Home Show.
RDS this weekend.
Tired of spending all evening looking for something to watch? Introducing Sky Stream, the new way to get Sky without a dish. Where all your shows from all your apps and channels are in one place. Stream unmissable Sky exclusives like True Detective and The Regime starring Kate Winslet. And Netflix shows like The Gentlemen. All in one simple bill for just €25 a month for 12 months. Search Sky Stream today. New customers only, 12-month minimum term. Requires broadband and relevant third-party subscriptions. Further terms apply.
RTE Radio 1.
Peppa Pig, George and family are back in a brand new stage show. Peppa Pig's Fun Day Out. Live at 3 Olympia on Saturday, May 11th and Sunday, May 12th. Get ready to sing and dance with colourful scarecrows, feed the penguins and build big sandcastles. Peppa's Fun Day Out. Tickets available now from Ticketmaster.ie.
Entertainment updates on RTE Radio 1.
Hello again. You're listening to the news at one. A national awareness campaign has got underway today to remind dog owners of their responsibilities. The campaign, entitled It's Not Your Dog's Fault, It's Yours, is aimed at increasing awareness of the harm that out-of-control dogs can do to people and to livestock. John Joe Fitzgerald is Vice President of the Irish Natural and Hill Farmers Association. He's been giving us his reaction to the campaign.
Every publicity campaign is good. It highlights issues, I suppose, that we have. But I suppose from a hill farmer's point of view and coming from a farming organisation, it doesn't go far enough. From what we can see, like on the hills here and from West Kerry right up to Donegal, it's still not dealing with those issues.
Do people who walk on the hills, do they have an awareness of the danger that their dog can pose to sheep and other livestock?
No, they don't. And even take the wildlife into account, like you'd have birds nesting on ground and stuff like that. And between sheep, I suppose, and wildlife, and they get disturbed, like it creates a lot of problems. The way I look at it, I suppose, from a hill farmer's point of view, we've made some inroads into highlighting the issues and stuff and trying to educate people that do go on the hills. But it's still not working. We still have issues where people are bringing their dogs onto the hills. They're chasing sheep, driving these sheep into cliffs and stuff. I had a situation myself where I lost about 8 sheep that jumped off the cliff face because this Labrador was left loose, and it chased these sheep out to the edge of the cliff, and they were so frightened they jumped off the cliff. Now, they had 150 foot of a fall. When I was trying to engage with the people, they took off running. I couldn't get a hold of them. But we have those situations happening year in, year out on the hills, and nobody seems to want to deal with it.
And what happens when you do manage to speak to hill walkers, to people who haven't got their dog on a leash?
Some people are very good, and then you get a very small minority that are absolutely abusive, threatening. We've got to the situation now for the older farmers have given up going on the hills and stuff and bank holidays and weekends because of the abuse they receive at the hands of these people.
Are there farmers around you who are closing off those walking routes or who are considering that?
At the moment, they are considering it. Actually, some of these farmers have said they have had enough of it. Nobody seems to want to deal with the situation with dogs and hills and bringing dogs and hills. We need the tourism industry. We need the walkers. And the only thing we're asking people to do is don't bring your dogs onto hills or farmland. If that would happen, it would make life a lot easier for a lot of people. It would encourage more walkers, because there is a lot of walkers out there who are afraid of dogs. And on top of that, look, we've got the support of Mountaineering Ireland, all the animal welfare and animal rights organisations. They want to see the dogs banned off of hills. That needs to happen, because they can see the damage that's been done. The farmer can't be on the hill every day, you know, checking on his sheep. It's not right. We can all see the damage that's been done to our sheep and stuff.
You're saying that you shouldn't be bringing your dog at all out onto the hills. Never mind having it under control. It simply shouldn't be coming on the walk with you.
It shouldn't be coming on the walk with you, because, look, we have dealt with people here. We have allowed people to go with their dogs on a leash. And what is happening is, as soon as they see the farmer gone, or you know, there's nobody around, and the first thing they do is leave the dog off the leash.
There is this dog control stakeholder group that's been formed. What would you like to see it doing to try to get to grips with this?
For a start, I suppose, as a farming organisation and that represents hill farmers, we'd like to have a seat at the table with that. Now, we've been asking, and we have written to the minister. What we would be asking is, look, I suppose, for the Oireachtas members, I suppose, to legislate to ensure that all non-working dogs are banned from hills and farmland. But if that legislation is to be enacted, you know, there has to be considerable fines there. But not only the fines, but we need the wardens. There needs to be enough wardens on the ground that can enforce this. You know, wardens can be everywhere in every mountain every day of the year. But if, you know, if they've done an on-the-spot, you know, they would appear in these locations, especially the tourism locations, every now and again, maybe once a month, twice a month. You know, wait at the gates, the entrance to these places, and when they see the people coming up with their dogs, say, look, you're not allowed to bring your dog on the hills here, and if you persist, there is a fine, and if the fine doesn't work, look, we'll bring you through the courts and stuff. If this continues, it needs to be made a criminal offence. If you are going out to the countryside, you're bringing your dog with you, and the landowner has asked you to remove your dog off my land, and you refuse to do so. Do you know, they need to be dealt with properly through the courts.
Sport on RTE Radio 1.
And it's very good afternoon to Siobhan Madigan. Siobhan.
Brian, thank you. Play has resumed at the weather-hit RBC Heritage event on the PGA Tour today. The world number one, Scotty Scheffler, well, he's set for yet another victory on tour this season. He leads on 20 under par, four clear of the field. The newly minted Masters champion is playing the final hold of his round as he closes in on what will be a fourth win in his last five tournament outings. Seamus Power has just signed off on his final round and finishes on 11 under par, placing just outside of the top 10. Positions. At the World Snooker Championship in Sheffield, Sean Murphy has beaten China's Li Haoqian by 10 frames to 5. That's in their opening round encounter. Stuart Bingham leads at the end of the first session of his encounter with Gary Wilson by 6 frames to 3. Bingham missing a final black in the last frame of the session, missing out on a 5-frame cushion. He has the advantage, though, 6 to 3. The 4-time champion Mark Selby trails his fellow Leicester man Joe O'Connor 7-2. They resume at 2:30 this afternoon. All to do for Selby, who has never lost in round one at the Crucible, while Mark Williams will begin against Si Zhao Hui. Three Irish boxers will be in action at the European Championship in Serbia today, all bidding for quarterfinal spots. Mayo's Sharon Sweeney opens up against a Russian opponent at 50 kilos. Nia Fey from the Ballybohol Club in Dublin also faces a Russian opponent today, while the Olympic qualified featherweight Michaela Walsh will begin against Francis Slythe Line Grossi at 57. The Ireland and Connacht wing Mac Hansen looks set to make a long-awaited comeback for his province before the end of the season. He's been penciled in to face Munster in May, having initially dislocated his shoulder against the same opposition back in January. Also set to return to action is the Argentine Santiago Cordeo. He's been out for some 8 months with a knee injury, which he sustained in Connacht's pre-season training. And a busy night ahead in the men's SSE Premier Division. in a little bit later. The league leaders Shelburne will host the champion Shamrock Rovers at Tolka Park. The cup holders St Pat's will be at home to Derry, and a Connacht derby in store at the Showgrounds as Sligo Rovers will host Galway United. And all three games, Brian, will kick off at 7:45.
Thanks indeed, Siobhan. Just a note for motorists this afternoon.